Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All About Romance. I'm your host, Tricia Harley McCarthy, a platform for writers, authors, and poets alike who love romance. Today's guest, I'm going to fangirl all over, it's Maria Lewis, best-selling author. In fact, I'm reading her latest release, Love Me Tomorrow, a Put a Ring on It series book, and it's fantastic. So let's get into an interview with Maria and let's find out more about her and her life and her dogs. I know she has dogs and her books and her life. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to All About Romance. And today's special guest is Maria Lewis. She's one of the kindest ladies I've encountered in the author world. She's advised me on many things on occasion, and she's even looked up things for me, like co-writing books and things like that. And I can't say enough about her. She's just the friendliest and open person, and she has dogs, so she's automatically, 100% in my book when you have dogs that you love and you post. So she also inspired my book on Ice, A Hockey Romance. So when I read her hockey series, I thought, oh, my God, I just love this series, and it was so exciting. And so she actually inspired me to write On Ice. So thank you, Maria. I'm going to bring you on now. And welcome to
Hi,
the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And I'm totally, like, smiling so hard right now, the idea that you're writing a hockey romance. Like, I squealed a little bit inside my heart.
Aw. Well, you were truly the inspiration. Because I never read a hockey romance. And I thought, oh, this is
really?
So cool. You know? Yeah.
So
I never read one until I read your whole series. So that was awesome.
Thank you so much. Well, I have to tell you that I don't know if you've heard of her. She's been around since the late 90s, but she hasn't published recently, Rachel Gibson. She in general got me into reading contemporary romance back like 2002, 2003, but her Chinook hockey series is what got me into hockey romance. Like, I love hockey as a sport, but her Chinook series, her book Sea Jane's Score, it's gone literally all over the world with me. So if you're like, one day I just need to read someone else's hockey romance and not the one that you're working on. I totally recommend that book. It's so good.
Oh, I will. After that, I read a few other authors. I can't remember. I read so many books. Sometimes I can't keep them all straight.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad you were inspired by someone else, too. So that's not like, we're trying to copy each other. But it's we all have our own voice.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, mine is modeled after the San Jose Sharks, which is my team, but they're the Otters. So
I love it.
And one of my beta readers actually helped me develop part of it because she's a big, huge hockey fan. So she was a consultant. So we kind of based it on a hockey player, defensive line player for the San Jose Sharks. So it was really a fun thing to do, and it's taken so long to get it done. I'm sure you've had those books where takes a long time to get it finished. So this one I'm very
Absolutely.
Pleased with. So thank you for your inspiration.
And I think hockey romance is one of those things that it's fun to read, and it's fun to dive in, and it gets addicting.
Yeah, and the other thing is I just had like a comment because on Instagram, and the lady goes, oh, hockey, interesting. Like, she'd never heard of that genre before. And I'm like, I hadn't either up until maybe a couple years ago. So it's everything's always developing. And I'm always confused by all the genres anyway, because it's like a new one shows up and pops up every other day. You're just trying to keep track.
I know. You close your eyes and you open them and you're like, oh, what just happened? And then there's like 15 new subgenres that are just like popping off.
Exactly. And so like the reverse harem one threw me off the course there. And I'm like, it's a reverse harem. And I had to look it up and I'm like, whoa, that's pretty cool. But,
It is really cool. Especially when it's like sci-fi. I tend to find if I do read, whenever I do read Reverse Harem, the sci-fi ones are really good.
Oh,
I think that they got otherworldly element to it. Oh, girl, you have to try them. There's not any, like, Ruby Dixon has some, and then there are some other authors that have more reverse harem, but they're, like, sci-fi, and they're amazing.
Okay, well, I'll definitely have to check that out because, like you say, there's just new stuff all the time. And all these different author names, I'm learning, you know, because I know you went on a retreat recently with Jamie Albright and a few others. Now, I know her name, and I've read her stuff. And a few others I think I've read, but it's been a while. So, you know, there's so many more up-and-coming authors to keep track of, too.
Yeah.
So that's
really
exciting,
is.
Though.
We
have our – go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
Oh, I was going to say we have our first caller. If you'd like to take a call, and then we can talk about Love Me Tomorrow.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Hold on. Let me pull her in. Let's see.
Okay. I'll try not to be nervous.
Let's see. Hi, this is Trish and Maria. Who's this?
This is Susan. How
Hello.
Are y'all?
Hi,
Hello.
Susan.
Hey, how are
Hi,
you?
Hi, Susan.
It's so wonderful to meet you.
You too.
Where are you calling
me
from?
I think you two are... Yeah.
I am from Mississippi, actually.
Oh, are you?
Can't you just tell that southern accent?
I can, absolutely. It's like it rang right a bell right immediately. Oh, that's so exciting. I'm just a little to the left of you, or right. I guess it depends which way you look at the map.
I do have a quick question. What other sports romance are you interested in, coming up with?
I have my hockey romances, my Blades hockey, and then I have, in my last series that just came out, Kiss Me Tonight, the hero and heroine both play football. So the hero, Dominic, he's a former NFL player, and the heroine, she was a college football player. She was a kicker, and now they're both coaching for high school, and unfortunately for Dominic, he is now the assistant coach to her head coach, which makes for a delicious chemistry.
I love that.
It was a lot
like
of fun, right? Especially when he finds out that she's the head coach. The chemistry is like off the chains.
Wow.
That is cool. I like that. That's kind of a breakthrough, honestly, because, I mean, how many, head football coaches do you see females and in a book?
I know.
Too? You know, it's usually the alpha
It's usually the alpha, which I love to try to play with, like, gender and, like, kind of flipping it on its head because I think it makes for a lot of really fun scenes. I was inspired by, because there's actually a lot of college age female, mostly kickers, but not all are kickers, that are trying to be drafted by the NFL right now. And so it was,
really?
I was
That's
finding
cool.
article after article. Yeah. And it was so fascinating to me. And so of course I was like, I want to make a heroine that's just like this. And she is super awesome and really funny.
Cool.
Yeah, I like that. Maria's books, I have a lot of humor in them. They're very, that she gets my humor too. So
thanks, Trish.
That helps when you're reading. I'm experiencing
too.
That. Sorry.
No, I was just saying thank you for the question too, Susan.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I'm going to listen in, but like I said, I'm going to say one thing here. I got a football player. My son plays football, and then his girlfriend is a volleyball. Maybe y'all should come up with one like that, right?
I think you should. That would be so much fun. Sports romances are my favorite to read. I can't get enough of them.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll pass that. Okay. Do you want to stay online, or do you want to just listen?
I'm going to listen in.
Hey, this is Susan's husband, James.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. How are y'all?
Hi there.
I'm good. Did you have a question?
No, ma'am, but I just have a comment. I'm not a sports or any kind of athlete, but I live that scenario every day because my wife thinks she's in charge.
Well, that's what she's told me.
That's right.
She believes.
That's right.
Yeah, she believes it. You keep telling yourself that.
There you go. That's right.
I was gonna say,
I love it.
I always think of my Big Fat Greek Wedding, and there was this scene. I don't know if y'all ever saw the movie, but I'm Greek, so therefore I feel this like major connection to it. But there's a scene where the mom or the wife, and she says, you know, the man might be the head of the family, but the woman is the neck of the family. And she turns him whichever way she wants him to go.
Yeah,
exactly right. So,
that's
Susan,
true.
You're the neck.
That's right. I'm the spoiled one, too.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man. We're going to listen in, then.
Okay. Well, the
Thank
best of luck.
Thanks for calling in. I appreciate
y'all
it.
Y'all too.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Y'all have
Take
a good
care. Uh-huh. You too. Bye-bye. Well, the other burning question I have is because I've never been to New Orleans, and I don't know how to pronounce it. Is that New Orleans? Is that, did I say it right?
You actually did it really, really well. So, funnily enough, when I moved down, because obviously I'm from Boston originally, and I moved down to New Orleans in 2008, and I made the mistake immediately of saying New Orleans. And I swear, there must have been like 10 heads that whipped around at the same time to all glare at me like, you just said that wrong. And I'm just looking at them like, I don't listen, guys. Like, and of course, at that point, it was guys too, right? Like, not y'all. At this point, I'm a convert 10 years later or almost 11 years later. But they're like, it's New Orleans. Like, you just got to let it roll off the tongue. Just New Orleans. And I was like, okay. New Orleans, and they're like, that's still wrong, Maria, try it again. And so it has been a gradual learning process, but it is New Orleans. And anytime someone says New Orleans, even now, like I find myself casting that side eye like I got 10 years ago, and I'm like, stop, Maria, don't be judgmental, they don't know.
I love it. That's kind of how I felt coming from California to moving to Oregon. As now I see a California driver and they just, you know, are going like a bat out of hell. And I go, it's no wonder. It's California driver. Yeah. So, I get that kind of that snobbery now. So,
exactly.
Of Oregon now.
And you have to and you kind of stop yourself and you're like, whoa, no. No, I was that person one time. Like, I can't be this way. But then,
I know.
You adapt to where you live. And so you take on what makes that place, that city.
Yeah. So here's the other question I had. You know how they have the beads that you get at Mardi Gras time?
Yeah.
Have you ever, gotten beads?
Flash for them?
The way they say
no. Nobody does that except for tourists. So you can tell who the tourists are by who's lifting their shirt. Because no local ever. Yep, it's exactly. And the fun thing is that everyone assumes like it's just for Mardi Gras that there'll be beads being thrown. But like they sell them at every souvenir shop in the French Quarter, which means that so I used to give tours. I gave historical tours and ghost tours down in the French Quarter. And, it could be June at 5:30 in the afternoon, and I'd be standing telling a story, and then all of a sudden I would just hear beads, being thrown from the balconies and, slapping against the concrete because people just get them at all times and just throw them. And then the later it gets, usually the more beads are being thrown as the drunker. As people get more drunk.
Exactly, Yeah.
So
the drunkersons are out with the beads. Yeah, that's funny.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really want to experience that. I really want to go and do, especially the ghost tour, because that's my thing. Because I was a paranormal investigator. So that
were
I
you?
I did the San Francisco one. Yes. Yeah.
I did
yes.
not know that.
I know.
So
I don't.
Cool. I have to. Yeah. I think it's really cool. I've been on many a paranormal investigation, and I was the person that sat in the corner and was like,
"Yeah,
don't let anything happen to me." After I was the tour guide, in a previous life, I was a historian. And so I ended up being hired to write the scripts for all the guides. I did all the research. And by default, I had to attend all of the investigations so I could do a write-up after them, which meant that, like, everybody else is like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. And I'm just like, I like it when it's on paper or on TV. But, like,
yeah.
I don't want anything happening to me.
You know, the funny part is, for me, going to a place that's haunted, and I've stayed at a couple. I stayed at the Holly Inn in North Carolina, and we stayed up in this this room that had a long hallway to the gable window, and it was raining. My husband had to go out. And I was there alone by myself, and there was a ghost in that place, and I was scared stiffless. I really was. I was scared.
I bet.
If I'm staying
at a really
place,
terrifying.
It is. And if I stay at a place and I'm not doing an investigation, I know it's haunted, I get scared. If I'm doing an investigation, I have no fear, none, zip. I'm in there figuring out what's going on and, you know, sensing everything and seeing where everything is. So, yeah, there's two sides of me. So I guess that's that Gemini thing going on. Occasionally.
Do you still do them in Seattle or not anymore?
No, well, I usually have people call me and ask about if they're having an issue, and I can actually remote view and see what's going on with them and kind of tell them what's going on. So a lot of times it's just a portal. It's actually helpful to people that they're terrified, you know, and you just want to help. So I'd still do that on occasion. So, and there's ghosts out there. People may not believe it until they encounter one, but they're there.
They have them.
Yeah.
My first apartment that I lived in New Orleans was this 19th century double shotgun. And I'll never forget because, I mean, you visit places and some places just have like an innate creepy vibe. It doesn't mean that they're haunted, but you get that kind of like chill down your spine. But I have never been particularly scared of a place until it was our first apartment that we lived in, myself and Mr. Lewis. And a friend of ours. So we were in one room and they were in the other. And we both had dogs. I had Athena still, who's my eldest dog child. And then they had Buddy. And we had a, in the front parlor, we had a chair like in the corner. And the two dogs, they would just bark at that chair at all times. And then because shotguns have, so there's two types of shotguns. There's like the shotgun style home where there's no hallway, and so one room leads to the next room, and then but usually double shotguns, there's an interior hallway, so it just goes all the way down. But they're like, I think we measured it, it was 45 feet long. Like, that's how long the hallway was. It was ridiculously long. And our bedrooms all the way in the back, and I'll never forget because sometimes as I'm talking, the light above me is like going in and out. I'm like, no. We'd be in bed getting ready to go to sleep, and Athena would sit on the threshold of the door staring down the hallway barking. And she never did that anywhere else. Like, as soon as we moved, she stopped all of that behavior. But that house, she was wired, but not in a puppy way, in a like creepy kind of way.
Yeah, when you speak, I get images, so I could tell it was an old lady that was there.
Really,
was an old lady. Yeah, old lady. Cut very Victorian looking. You know, the long dress and almost like a lace head thing.
Huh.
I don't even know what they even call that. So yeah, and
like
she looked almost. Yeah, a little bit, but it was more like it looked like a doily, actually. I don't know.
Huh.
But she looked almost like an apple doll to me, the way her face was kind of scrunched up. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if she's history there, but Yeah, I know nothing of the history at that place. I tried to find some, but I couldn't really find anything. It seems like it was a rental unit for a really long time. But that whole section of town is the Garden District, and so it's a very, very old, old section of town. So probably dating back to the 1830s, 1820s. So I would not, I can totally imagine someone like that living there. I don't know when, you know what I mean, in the lineup of residents, but absolutely. Because it was a little creepy, I will admit.
Well, it is unnerving because we as human beings, we sense things. You know, it's like you go to a party and you kind of sense something about someone over there and you're kind of like, eh, I don't want to be over there with them. And it's because we're sensing their energies. And the same thing with ghosties. It's the same thing, spirit. And so, it's interesting. And I know we could probably talk about the whole show about that.
Yeah,
but
I know.
But actually, but eventually I'm going to write a real good ghost story. That's kind of my thing.
Oh, you should.
I do, and I think I have an idea, but I'm not sure yet. But I have to finish the other 100 things I have going. And sure, you understand that.
Oh, absolutely.
How many stories do you have in your head? On. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I was like, is that a question I should answer? Because I don't know if I know the answer to that.
Well, it's at
least six.
Well, for me, I'll go somewhere, I'll look at something, I'll read something, I'll see something on IG or something, and it triggers me, and I think, oh, that'd be such a good story. And I'm like,
It's hard to shut it off.
It is.
I will say I've made a pact with myself since a year and a half ago that I would stop, I don't want to say getting excited about books that aren't yet, but I might jot down notes, but I no longer allow myself to write them until it's time, because then I can't juggle books. I don't have that sort of multitasking skill. And so I'm like, no, Maria, take your notes. When it's time, it's time. But otherwise, just focus on the book that you have to write right now.
Wow. That's discipline, because for me, I have to have too many fingers and too many pies. I've got two books going now. Yeah. Well, not really, but you try to not, because
maybe
you want to.
Not for your mental state, but for the readers.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying. So let's get into Love Me Tomorrow and talk about Owen and Savannah and that storyline, because I'm enjoying it. I haven't finished the book yet, but don't give away any good stuff. But
I won't. No spoilers. I'm so glad you're enjoying it, though.
It's
a book that has been. Oops, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I was waiting for you.
It's a book that's been in my head for. Actually, since probably early fall of 2017. So it is another one of those ones where I didn't allow myself to write, but I took so many notes and was just thinking about it for, again, almost 2 years, or actually 2 years. And it is a bit of a, I don't want to say it's an unrequited love story, because both Owen and Savannah do want each other, but it is definitely has a slightly forbidden element to it, in that Owen met Savannah's sister first, and although their relationship was very casual and very not explicit whatsoever, it does lend that bit of that they, especially Savannah, feels like she can't have Owen. And so what ends up in lead up is that she is cast. Her sister is supposed to be cast with her, but for reasons that I will leave out as non-spoiler section of this talk.
Thank you.
Her sister, Amelie, can't go on the dating show. And so Savannah ends up on her own. And lo and behold, who is the person who gets out of the limo but Owen himself? And so she sends him home. It's in the prologue, so no spoilers. But it leads to one of the most like combustible and just tangible relationships that I think I've ever written. And truly writing their story, their love story, I feel like made me want to be a better person and made me look at myself and the way that I live my life and try to align it in a way that I think is for the better. So it's, I love them as a couple, but they truly, truly touched me in a way that's like very impactful and very lasting.
Aww. That's lovely. Seriously, that's really, that's impactful. And, you know, it's amazing how characters had that impact on people. I mean, characters you've written, characters you've read, you know.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think it's the beauty of books. It really is. So, I mean, you can find anything from something that will make you laugh when you're having a bad day to something that will make you think long after you've, you know, finished the book and hit the end. And it's what I love about reading and what I love about writing.
That's cool. And I love the premise of put a ring on it because that is so bachelorette, you know, and so bachelor. And I love that premise. I think that it's fun to write.
Thank you.
I think I just got another idea inspired by you. No.
Ooh, man. what's it called? Yeah, I really loved it. And I have been a bachelor, bachelorette, bachelor paradise fan for probably ages. Like, I think from the second or third season. And so I'd always wanted to write something in that world. But a lot of people have done the during the show, and so I thought it would be fun to do what happens after the show. So the first book in the series opens up with the proposals that obviously do not happen. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
then by the third book we get the reunion show. So it's the everything that happens post filming, which for me was a lot of fun to write.
So that is awesome. And and so obviously, this is a series. Are you planning more books?
No. And this one was always, for me, going to be just a three-book series. So the first book and the second book are Nick Stamos is number one, and Dominic Da Silva is for number two. And both of them were the final contestants on the show. And then book three, Savannah, she's the bachelorette. So it, in my head, it was always going to be a three-book series, very very concrete, nothing coming after. I do have a free short story coming out in December that has secondary characters from Love Me Tomorrow, but it's not in the series or anything like that. So it's just for fun because I can't let them go. And maybe some spinoffs later on from some of the characters that I really love from all three books, but it won't be part of the Put a Ring on It series.
That's cool. I like that. Now, what do you have coming up? Can you share anything juicy?
Yeah. I can spill the tea as to put a ring on it, a journalist would say from Celebrity Tea.
I love that.
But
I love that. That's so great.
That was perhaps one of the most fun things writing it in between all three books. So for whoever's listening in, there is an anonymous reporter, Celebrity Tea Presents, and he/she are in all three books, and so they have their little articles, and it was a lot of fun. And by the end, I actually based them off of Reality Steve. If anyone knows about Reality Steve, he covers all Bachelor and Bachelorette news, and I read so many of his articles
cool.
to get the I read so many articles to get the tone down, and like by the end of Love Me Tomorrow, I was like, it's a little scary how much I enjoy writing these chapters and like how well I do them because they're not a nice person. And I'm just like, this is a little terrifying, but I have fun with it. So,
you could fall back as a gossip columnist, I guess, at some point if the writing doesn't
reality
pan out for you, which I'm sure it has.
Yeah, I'm like, Reality Steve, watch out, Maria Lewis is coming after your job. No, I'm just kidding. Steve, who is that person? Take them down. No, just kidding, right? Coming up, I have, like I mentioned, I have the short story that's going to belong to the Holiday Ever After anthology.
with some amazing authors like Erin Nicholas and Lily Valente and Kate Canterbury, Lucy Thor, Willa Winters. There's some other ones, Amy Andrews, J.H. Cross, Erica Kelly, Kimberly Kinkid. I think I just listed all of them. I could be wrong. If I forget one, I hope they listen to this as well, but I hope they don't feel slighted that I forgot their name. but it's going to be a lot of fun. So that will be 2 weeks in December. And then after that, I'm going back to romantic suspense for a trilogy next year. And I am very excited because I've been thinking about that trilogy. As I mentioned before, I don't usually allow myself to write, but I couldn't stop myself on this one. And so it's a passion. It's another really big passion project for me, and I am pumped to really dig into it and, you know, dive into that world.
So tell us your ritual for writing. What is it that you do or need or have around you when you're writing? What's your deal?
Usually I have one or both dogs next to me, not by my choice, but by theirs. whenever I try to write in my office, my dog, Athena, cries because she wants me to sit on the couch with her. So I usually end up like curled in a corner while they're on either side of me. I don't usually do a lot of rituals, but what I definitely do is I'm a really big reviser and editor. So I tend to, I was an editor in old life before the historian time, the historian era, if you will. And so I tend to write, and then the next morning I will read what I wrote and edit it and revise it and then continue. But that happens every day. So by the end of the book, I usually have read the book however many chapters there are. So if there are 40 chapters, I've already read and revised 40 chapters before I even get to the epilogue, because I can't move on until I'm really happy with where I am. So that happens with every book. So it's a bit of a process. It's a bit of a long, tedious one.
Right. Well, it might save you some time at the back end when the edit actually happens. So maybe it's not as intensive as, I know a lot of authors are always griping about the edit process, because I'm not one for doing the edits as good as well. You know,
I think it has its pros and its cons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least for me, I do my things differently with my beta readers. I write a chapter and then I send it off to them. And so they read the chapters as they come off the press. And then before then, it's great. It's a great system. And by the end of the book, everyone knows what's happened, and the feedback is fantastic for me. So I feel like I almost have an accomplished product at that point. And it seems to work for me. And then I don't know, how do you plot your books?
I don't. I am a Cancer through and through. Yeah, so I pants. I do not plot. I always have a theme running throughout the book. I know that, and I know where the character arcs are going, so I know what they're trying to get past. Usually I know where what the end is. So whether it's the climax or where, like, what that big moment is, or if it's a cliffhanger book, I know what the cliffhanger is. But otherwise, I really enjoy letting the characters lead me. And anytime I try to plot, because I have most definitely, I like look at it and then somehow mid chapter, I just go off in a different direction anyway. So I've learned that, I just let the process happen as it will. And it can be really chaotic. So usually my books, the first half is where most of my editing needs to happen, my revising, because as I go along, because I'm still finding my footing, like where exactly I'm going. And then the second half doesn't really need as much because it's pretty solid by that point. So I'm sure it would be faster and smoother if I plotted. But it strips some of the joy away from me. So I don't. I just pants my way along, for better or for worse.
Well, I applaud you, because I'm pretty much the same way, but I have a lady that helps me, and I go, okay, here's this chapter, let's plot it. And of course, Mm-hmm. We have an idea of where it's going to go, but, you know, the characters start writing stuff, and I end up with a serial killer. And don't ask me how that happened. It just happened. You know, I can't tell you why, but it's that works out so well for me, I guess, because the characters just take on a life of their own, and you're just kind of the scribe, you know, writing the story. And so I generally think we have writing guides, you know, from the other side that help with us with our channeling the storyline. And so
I agree.
Yeah.
So I think there's something magical about I was just going to say, I think there's something magical about being surprised by your characters, just as a reader would be surprised. And those are the moments that I live for, where I'm like, oh, this is happening. This was not expected, but it's about to go down. And it usually those are the spots that readers are like, oh my God, that happened. And I'm like, I know, I felt the same way. So it's kind of fun to be able to, like, you know, dive into it that way, for me at least.
I love, I think it, see, because that gets me excited to go to the next chapter, because you just never know what's going to transpire, and it takes all these twists and turns, because I don't know about you, but that's kind of my thing, cliffhangers and angst, and some people
don't
like
it.
That. I've had a reviewer tell me my characters need therapy, because so much angst.
Well, that's
like,
characters in a book.
great one. That's perfect, because I'm like, well, gee, that's what I like to read, so that's what I like to write. So I guess you should apologize for what you write, because people are going to connect or they're not. It's, you know, either or. So
yeah, but I do think
I kind of learned to let that go.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I think if a book can evoke emotion, no matter what the emotion is, like, there's something kind of awesome about that. You know what I mean? Like, if they hit a cliffhanger and you're like, what? You're like, perfect, I did my job, because I want you to have that what moment. Like, that's like season 7, last episode of Game of Thrones. We're all like, whoa, what just happened? And now we have to wait a year and a half, 2 years for the next season to happen. So we won't talk about season 8, but, you know, prior to that. And so it's like that exact same emotion, that excitement. And so I think if someone wants to throw their Kindle, I'm like, perfect. This went the right way.
I think you're right. Cause I'll have people go, you made me cry. And I had like 3 beta readers on one chapter cry. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm creating, you know, chaos here. But it really was a compliment, because they really connected with the emotions and of the writing. And so I was like, wow, I was kind of laughing too. I wasn't laughing at them, but I was laughing because I said, well, I've done my job then. And that's kind of what my philosophy is about, you know, hopefully my writing connects with people on a level that, you know, evoke. Otherwise,
you broke
what's
down.
The point, you know?
I think if you connect, that's the ultimate compliment.
I agree. So how are you on a review? How are you about getting reviews?
I love them. I won't lie that I can say that I have thick skin, but do we all have thick skin, really? Because I don't. Like, you know, I try to take away.
I don't.
I try to take away the feedback and apply it to my next book, you know what I mean? If someone said, especially I think your earlier books, like I don't tend to look at reviews at my earlier books, because for my own sanity, like, it's probably not the best thing for me to do that. But I try to take that feedback, and sometimes I will order extra Chinese food to soothe my feelings. But I think that those ones give you strength to do better, and then the good ones just bring the biggest smile to your face. They always do for me, and I feel whenever I get a good review, and it doesn't matter if it's a 4 or a 5, but the review itself, like I think I had one where it was like, I think it was like a single line for Love Me Tomorrow, but it was something along the lines of like, this book was so hot, I had to put my head in a refrigerator. And I was like, that that my days made. But that just made my entire day. In fact, it made my entire week, and I had a pep in my step for just forever. So it's a double-edged sword, but you try to learn from the bad, and then for the good ones, I let those ones really just sink in, because those are the ones that make me excited to write. You know, they make me feel like I can do this, I can tackle it, and I can live my dream. So,
right. That's great. How do you get people to leave a review? Because I know that is a huge issue for a lot of indie authors. That people will tell me, I go, well, did you leave a review? No, I'll do it later. And I never hear back. And I'm like, wow, you know, because I understand now as an author and how important reviews are for you on Amazon, especially to get the word out about your writing. So what do you say about that?
Yeah, I try to be really understanding because as a whole, I'm not a reviewer. I've never been a reviewer, but I am a shouter, if that makes sense. So when I love a book, like, you will hear about it on Instagram. You will hear about it in my newsletter. You will hear about it in my reader group. You will hear about it on my Facebook page. I will tell 15 of my friends to go buy this book because I'm obsessed with it. So I am the definition of a shouter. But I have never been much of a reviewer, and I don't know why necessarily. I think I've been a writer since I was very young, and I actually in my teens, I don't know if you know fanfiction.net, there used to be the equivalent. It was fictionpress.com. Where fan fiction was fan fiction, Fiction Press, which I don't even know if it's around anymore. It's been 16 years. It was all original work. And so I started putting up my, and it was chapter by chapter. And I started putting up my book. I think I was around 14 or 15. And I specifically remember stopping around 17 because I was quite young, and my book had been plagiarized, like blatantly taken and like put on a different site. And nowadays I see plagiarism and I'm like, it happens. Like, you can't do anything about it. You just move on. But to a 17-year-old, like, that was heartbreaking. And my soul was just crushed. Like, I was like, oh God, you know? And I had built up quite a following, but I think even from then for reviews, because there weren't reviews, but there were comments, and I would see there could be like 150 good comments and then one negative comment, and it just lingered with me. And so I never had wanted to do that to other people, you know what I mean? Like, so if I loved it, I shouted about it, and if I didn't love it, I just kept it to myself. So that's kind of like my look on it. But for readers now, so I tend to be really understanding. Not everybody wants to review, and I appreciate any tagged comment or post or anything like that. And I just do ask, I say, you know, if you enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you left a review, because at the end of the day, reviews are for readers, you know what I mean? And if a book made you laugh hysterically, you know what I mean? And and you have the same sort of humor, and another reader sees that review and they're like, I have that sort of humor. Like, that makes me laugh. And so they get it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I try to just be like, you know, and anytime I get to like a milestone mark, so I'm almost at 200 reviews for Love Me Tomorrow, I'll be like, hey guys, can we get us there? Like, it'd be really cool. But I'm not gonna stalk it. You know what I mean? Like, they'll come as they do, and I'll be grateful for every single one, because that's a review that someone didn't have to leave one for, but they did. So, I owe them everything.
Absolutely, because without the readers, what are we gonna who are we gonna write for? You know, and that's the backbone.
Yeah, nobody. Exactly.
And, you know, I've had people leave reviews on my book page, which is an alternative, because not everyone has access to Amazon the way Amazon has it structured for people who have to buy a certain amount of dollar of items and et cetera. And I've had a lot of people who have had a problem with that, and they can't leave a review. So that's good. That's where you have Goodreads, and we've got BookBub.
They so, all help every single one of them do.
Yes. What is your advice to indie authors starting out? What would you, if someone could come to you as an indie author when you first start out, what would be the one big thing that you could tell them to do to avoid a pitfall, for example?
And do they have, I'm like, I need more details. Do they have books out or do they have no books out?
Let's say they're unpublished.
Unpublished. Okay, so I have two things. The first would be the best advice that I was ever given, and to be fair, it was not given to me. It was in an author group on Facebook, and I, in the beginning especially, I was too scared to ever comment or post, so I was the very definition of a lurker. Like, I would read everything and say nothing at the same time. And what classic, like the secret one, just like sitting in the corner, annoying creepily, of course, but still there. And I had the one thing that I saw over and over and over again was like, if you could go back and change one thing about when you started publishing, what would it be? And everyone said to have multiple books in lineup. They might not be edited, but multiple books completed. And so I had my first book actually. Yeah, so I had my first book, Say It'll Be Mine, actually done 2 years before I hit publish in April 2017. And I kept seeing all those comments like, wait, just wait, just wait. And I was like, okay. And at that time, I was still at my full time job, and it was at the very definition of a full time job because I was there 40 hours a week. And I was on call for all the tour guides in three different cities whenever they called me. Tour guides do not
take
9 to 5 hours. Yeah, so I was very stretched. And I took 2 more years to write another 3 books. And then when I hit publish in April 2017, I had 5 ready. They weren't all edited. But they were done, and they just had to go through my editor and, you know, polish. But I really do think that helped me, like in the long haul, because that really gave me a leg up that I don't think I would have had. I don't think it's definitely not impossible to not do that. Cause like one of my best friends, Jamie, Albright, we talked about briefly earlier, she didn't do that, and she's had amazing success. So this is not something where I'm like, this is the only way to do it, but I know that for me it helped me because I am not a fast writer at heart. That really gave me a leg up to get started.
Were they series of books or were they standalone?
So they were series. That was my Nola Hart series. The only one, the first three Nola Hart and the first 2 Blades hockey books. So they were series. I mean, they're standalones. They're standalones in the series, of course. But those were my first books that I had done. So they're really fun and I love them, but I held on to them with a vice until I was ready to get started.
That's great. That's great advice. Yeah. I love that. Now, how about an indie author like myself I have a series out there. I've got my original novel. I've got a couple of paranormals that are standalones and they're novellas. And I only get to a certain point with the reviews and getting the readership interest. And how does one go to the next level? What is your advice there?
I think there's 2 ways to look at it. So one is a mental standpoint and one is a like tangible standpoint. And so the mental standpoint, and sorry if you can hear my dog Zeus, he's decided he wants to play with me.
That's fine.
the first thing is, again, I think it's a mental standpoint. And this is, I attended the Indie Tea that was hosted by Whitney G in May.
I love her.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's like inspiration for me, a marketing genius, I think. I think it was May 2017, so it was literally a month after I published my first two books, because I published Power Play and Say It'll Be Mine 2 weeks apart. Stacey Hart was there. She's another romance author who is fabulous, and I shout this advice to like anybody who will listen. So like I hope people are like, who's Stacey Hart, and then go check her out, because I feel like I just like give her, I'm like, go watch her, she's amazing, go read her books. But she hosted a kind of like a round table, and she did, and in her talk, she said that whether it's a new release, whether it is a goal, whatever it is, you need to think three things. And this is something I have done for 2.5 years. I do this at the beginning of every quarter, and I write this down, and then I do this for every release, and it really helps me. The first thing is think about what your dream is. Like, what is the unicorn thing that could happen to you? And whatever that is, write it down. And she was talking about new releases, but I do think it applies to anything. And So you want to think like that big thing. Maybe it's hitting top 100. Maybe it's hitting USA Today. Like, what is that big thing that you want to accomplish? The second thing is write down what your actual expectations are. So based on what work you've put in, based on whether you're building a newsletter, whether you are, you know, doing stuff to send people to Book Funnel to download the first three chapters, like whatever you're doing, look at all of that and then come up with your actual expectations of whatever that goal is that you're trying to achieve. And then the third thing is, what is the base minimum that needs to happen so you can keep living your dream? Because at the end of the day, writing is your dream. Like, yes, you might have like these aspirations of like, I want my book turned into a movie, but if you are still writing, you are still dreaming and you are still making it happen. So what is the base minimum that you need to do to keep doing that? And for me, I think for any indie author, whether you've published 15 books or 2 books, those three things are something that if you can lay out for yourself, although they're not like, oh, spend more on Facebook ads or, you know, find 10,000 new readers, they're something that you can write and begin to apply and look at your successes as one thing and look at what you might think is a failure, but not it is not an actual failure. So that I've kept with me for 2.5 years. and then the other thing I would say, yeah, it's really fabulous. And, I owe her a lot because those three things, that list has kept my head on straight more times than I can count. And then I would say the last thing is for indie authors who, you know, have books that want to go to that next tier is to really make sure the foundation of your business is really kind of not, I don't want to say set in stone necessarily, but it's everything is the best that it can be. Because I feel like if you have a newsletter and you have automations or you have a reader group and you're active, you're not just posting in there once a week, you know, you're posting in there every day or every other day and you're really engaging, make sure that everything is as it should be, because it's very hard, I feel like, to climb if you're climbing on pillars that are already cracking and crumbling. And so when everything is really as it should be, you can keep going. And then the keep going is more books and more money that you put into the books, which leads to more visibility, which leads to more readers finding you. You know what I mean? There's this whole cycle and this whole like kind of treadmill mentality that if you do one thing, it leads to the next. You do that, it leads to the next. Kind of like a domino effect. But you can't do any of that if your basic foundation is unlevel. And so for me, I had taken the SPF, the Self-Publishing Formula 101 with Mark Dawson. I took that. It just happened that he offered it for the first time. So I can't even say like, I was like, oh, I will take this 5 months before I publish. But it just was when he offered it. And I think I took it November of 2016. And I sat there and I listened to every single video that he had, every single one. And I still apply all of those things. And I've just tweaked them to fit my branding and what I need, but I really do think it helps.
And who was that? I didn't get his name. Who you're saying? Mark Dawson.
Yeah,
okay.
Mark Dawson. He writes thrillers. His most famous series is Jack Milton or John Milton. I can't remember. I think it's John Milton. The John Milton series. But he is really, really good with marketing and everything like that. And I owe a lot to him in that course because it really helped me get on the right foot. So starting off, which I think helped in the long run.
That's great, because I'd never heard of him. So mm-hmm. a lot of people have not heard of him. And luckily you did, so you could pass up to
yeah.
people who are, you know, just getting started. And, you know, you always get someone who always tells you, I want to write a book.
yeah.
And I'm sure you've heard that 100 times. It is.
Yeah, but we've all been there. We've all wanted to write a book. So I hear it from other people,
right.
and I think, like, I said that too once upon a time, you know. And the good thing is,
yeah.
is that anybody can do it. As long as you have
and
your
that,
heart in
that's
it,
why,
I think.
Yes, and that's why I started this platform, is because when I started out, I had nobody to turn to. I had no clue what I was doing. I'm still no clue sometimes what I'm doing. And so this gives me an opportunity to bring people on such as yourself or established authors and other people who have various talents to offer to other people and share their experience and knowledge and expertise. So that's kind of hopefully will help other people, you know, moving forward in their careers as writers and poets to, you know,
absolutely.
Go to the next level. And so, and that's so cool. Thank
yeah.
you for sharing all that. That's amazing.
Of course.
We're actually,
yeah, and I think
we're actually,
are we over time?
Go ahead. No. We're almost. No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. We've got like another minute. I was just going to add really fast that I think there's something to really keep in mind is always to reach out. The one thing that I've always tried to do and is reach out and network and meet new people, but continue to stay in my lane. And not in a negative
yes.
way, but in a have a set goal and reach for it. And don't allow yourself to be influenced or intimidated or anything like that by other people, because they all have their own paths and their own lanes too, and you can only do yours. And I have really tried to really bring that into my life for the last 2.5 years that I've been publishing, because it is a dream, right? And you want to have it and you want to grasp
yeah.
it and you want to keep it for as long as possible. So everybody's
right.
trying to move up, but everybody has their own path to do, and all you can do is hustle and live and breathe it and bleed it and make it yours. So
I think that's excellent advice. And so tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, of course. So I am on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find me at Maria Lewis Author, super easy. And it's L-U-I-S. I know some people are like, is there an O in there? I'm like, no, it's just U-I-S. and then I'm also in my reader group, and that's Book Boyfriends Anonymous. And those are the places that I am the most active online.
Yes, and I love those groups. They're really fun, and you're really great in them. And you do a wonderful job as far as steering your path. I think you're fantastic. I really admire you, and you're an inspiration to me, and I know to a lot of other authors, because I mentioned your name to a friend of mine. They go, oh, so they were very impressed that you were on my little show. I was impressed too. I was very happy that you did decide to come on and share with us. And you are welcome back anytime. You know, you could co-host.
Thank
we
you.
Can interview other authors whenever you want to do, or we
that
can actually
so
do
fun.
We could do a paranormal show. We could do that.
That would be fun.
Some type of paranormal. Yes. In fact, I'm planning
something
on Halloween, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know about that, just because I know here it'd be really hard. But
yeah,
one of my best
be
friends, he's a voodoo priest, and he's also a paranormal investigator, Michael Bill, and he is fantastic. And the stories he has will leave chills down people's spines.
Yeah. That's really cool and perfect. So thank you, Maria, for being with us today
thank
and
you
sharing
so
your insights and your book. And I hope you had a good time. I had a blast. I thank you so much
I
for being
too.
On here. And please tell other authors that you know who want to be interviewed. I will be happy to interview anybody. So
absolutely. I will definitely spread the word.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And give your dogs a hug for me, okay?
I will. Thank you so much. And thank you, Susan. I know she called in. I don't know if she's still here, but thank you for calling in.
She's listening. And so tomorrow's guest is going to be K.G. Fletcher, and she's going to be talking about her book, A Star Falls from the Sky. And I will be back with you tomorrow, and I look forward to it. And thank you again, Maria. You have a great weekend. Thanks again.
Thank you all. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night. Are you still there?
I am still here.
Can you still hear me? Okay. Thank you so much. That was amazing.
No problem. I wasn't sure to sign off or not sign off.
No, I'm glad we could chat a little bit. No, so how do you think it went?
I think it was fabulous. Thank you so much for having me on. It was so much fun.
Good. That's what I want. And I hope I wasn't too, I didn't want to do the pat questions, what inspired you to write? But, the funny part, you were talking about fan fiction. That's where I started. That's how I started writing.
Thank you.
I started writing fan fiction. Yeah. Bridget Jones' Diary. I was obsessed with that movie when it came out.
It
speaks to you? I mean, yes, how a book or a movie speaks to you, and it spoke to me at that point in time. So I thought, I'm going to start writing, that. And I started getting some really good comments or reviews or whatever you want to call them. And I was shocked because, the grammar
That's
was atrocious
so awesome.
And the punctuation.
Right, I know. I don't even want to look at my old stuff. So I'm like, ooh, I don't know about that. But it would be really interesting to ask people if they came from fanfiction.net or Fiction Press, one of those. I wonder how many people would say yes, that was me, because I did it all throughout high school, and like I said, I only stopped when it was plagiarized, and my 17-year-old heart was not strong enough to be meh and keep going,
E.L. James started that way with 50 Shades of Grey. I guess that's how she started. And, so that's such a great platform, because anyone can really write whatever they want or, continue characters or comics, whatever they're into. And so I thought that was great that you had started that way. And I didn't, in my 30s, so, and I'm 58 now, so.
Well, my fiancé, Michael, that's still all he reads is fan fiction. I mean, he reads it video game fan fiction, the ones that we really like.
Yeah.
But that's all he reads.
Yeah.
He will pick up a Tom Clancy novel or even James Patterson. He does read other stuff. But if I see him staring at his phone very intently, he's reading one of his fan fiction ones and gets really excited. And he's like, they haven't updated in 4 months and they just put out a new chapter, So it's still really big. It's still a big world. I guess you just don't hear about it as much if you're solidly in the indie publishing part of it.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And I wanted to ask you, why do you call him Mr. Lewis?
I started it because he is a police officer here in New Orleans. And in the beginning, he wasn't sure if he wanted his first name to be used, just in case people were able to narrow him down on Facebook, via me and find who he is. And then it just stuck. So they all know Michael, But sometimes I get stuck in the habit of calling him Mr. Lewis.
I love that. I think that's hilarious. Yes, it sounds like an old married couple from 40 years that they've been together. I'm sure you have. So and you were talking about past lives. We'll have to chat about that some other time.
Yeah,
so,
I would love that.
So I think we should do a paranormal show. So if you are willing to come back, and I'll schedule you for a paranormal show, I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, we could absolutely do that. And like I said, if we had enough time to let it know, and if my friend was off, he might be able to pop in. Because like I said, he's a voodoo priest.
Yeah.
And he is he's still a paranormal investigator here in New Orleans. Yeah, so he works the ghost tours and investigations all the time. But he is just absolutely, he's just fabulous. And he's one of my close friends. So we always joke around, me and Michael, that because he's a police officer, so we're always like,
yeah.
I'm like, you know the underworld of New Orleans, and I do too, but just in completely different ways.
Yeah, it's under the dirt part.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
He's like, it's true. Yeah, so yeah, I miss that world. I'm not in it anymore, but I do miss it a lot, and I stay in touch with all my friends. So,
I just judge
TV shows.
I'm gonna have a friend of mine locally here. He's a medium, so I was hoping to get him on the Halloween night and do a show with him, and see where that goes. I don't know, but we'll see if he can come and make it. I'd like to do something this Halloween. I'm spur of the moment kind of person sometimes.
Yeah, if he can't, my mom is actually a medium. I don't know what she's doing.
Okay.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, so I don't have anything. I have no skills, nothing.
Right.
Just vibe.
Yeah,
skills,
well,
but nothing beyond that. But
I'm a full blown psychic, so I don't go around telling everybody that because I kind of keep that
quiet.
Exactly. So I kind of keep that quiet. I'm kind of intuitive, and that usually is pretty okay for people to accept. And, women's intuition, whatever. So, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that completely because it's strange because most of the women in my family are very intuitive and or psychic in some way, and I've never had anything. But I do, and since I was a young child, I've seen a lot of things in dreams. That always, and it's strange. It'll always be the same dream, always, like down to like the moment someone will put a foot out or something like that, you know. And then the event always happens, and then I never have that dream again. But then I'll have a few years pass, and then it's the same thing, you know what I mean? And then that event will pass. It comes into play, and then I never have that dream again. So it's interesting how everybody kind of. If you have that intuitiveness, it kind of changes for every person.
Yeah.
But.
And so you're clairvoyant. You're clairvoyant because you have the dreams, the prophetic visions and stuff like that. So, yeah, you're very clairvoyant.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't know if there was a name for it. But, but it's been happening since I was a young child, and it used to really scare me to the point where I wouldn't go to sleep because it would be every night for months until whatever it was happened.
Yeah, you don't know what you're dealing with as a little kid. You know, I think I was too, and I just didn't understand it. And I would hear things, and you know, it was very scary at times. So
yeah, and already when you were older, you can stop it in some ways. Like you can put this is a boundary. Whereas a child, you don't understand that.
Right. Yeah. And and there's the rituals of protection, and you know, so and so forth. I was going to tell you. That your Mr. Lewis should call in Archangel Michael for protection when he's on the job because he's the patron saint of police officers. Good. Okay.
Yeah,
you knew that.
Actually,
cool.
Yeah, that's actually what they named him for. His dad's a police officer as well. Michael is a fourth generation.
Yep.
And he actually wears a medallion around his neck every day, and it's Archangel Michael.
Perfect.
His dad wore it until he was old enough to wear it, and then he wears it under his, you know, under everything. So, and he wears it every day. So
good.
Yeah. So it's interesting how that.
That's my gift. That's my gift. That's what I channel. I channel archangels. So I'm kind of this.
Do you?
Angel lady. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you would. You
angels
would,
are cool.
I feel like you and my mom would have the most fascinating conversations, truly, because talking to you feels like talking to her in that same way of both having the intuitiveness, and you know what I mean, and being able to pull on all of these things. It's I have like chills on my arms, but in a good way. Because it's really fascinating.
It's kindred spirits. You kind of know because soulmates, as I call them, are not necessarily always have to be, you know, love interests, but soulmates are people before. And I'm certain that we've, you know, interacted before at some point. And because I just know. You just know when you meet people Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I love that part. And I've never met you in person, but I hope to. hope one day when I'm in my dream, my vision is to come around in my huge old big ass, you know, motor home, doing my book tour, and I'll definitely come to NOLA.
Come down.
That's my dream.
I think you would love
yeah.
it. Because
oh, yeah,
Rome,
I'm sure
I don't know how the Northwest is. I know the Northeast, it's slowly becoming more acceptable to talk about, like, if you're psychic or whatever. Like, it's, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's more, it's not just like, oh, okay, and then, like, quietly walk away. But
yeah.
in the Wollin, it is just, it's so very open. And there's this quality to it that I swear, like, it hangs in the air. You can feel the history and you can feel the culture. And I feel like sometimes one of those things. I actually moved here. Do you remember? Have you ever read Sherilyn Kenyon?
Mm-mm.
She writes paranormal. Her Dark Hunter series is based in New Orleans. And when I was in my teens, I read all the books. And I probably shouldn't have been reading them. They were way too sexy for my age, but I was anyway. and when I came to college, I was like, I want to go to New Orleans. And my mom's like, you've never been to New Orleans. And I was like, I don't care. I feel like that's where I have to be. And sure enough, in the last 10 years, every time I have tried to move away or have moved away for one thing or another, I have come back pretty much immediately, except for when I was in graduate school. There's just some hold on the city that it affects people, even if you're like, okay, cool, I came and I'm never coming back again. But most people, that doesn't happen to you. Most people, you come back, you come here once and you find yourself just like a gravitational pull to come back again.
Mm-hmm.
It's very odd,
mm-hmm.
but it's something about the city.
No, it's not odd because when I go to Victoria, British Columbia, I felt like, oh my God, I've been here before. My husband feels the same way, and it
yeah.
turns out we had a past life together, and so
yeah.
that this area is just where I belong. You know, it's
yeah.
sort of California
it's
or Missouri, wherever I've lived.
Yeah.
It didn't
feel the same as
so,
you are now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
nope.
I can believe
I feel
it.
At home.
Yeah.
I feel at home,
I can
and
believe
I feel,
it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you have to be comfortable where you are, too, because you'll never be happy if you're not. And there's so many people
yeah.
who are so unhappy these days. It's so sad. But that's
very true.
Story. Okay, my dear, I'm going to let you go. I need to go
thank
eat,
so
but I could probably talk
every,
to you all night.
Yes, go get food. And thank you so much
virtual
for having
hug.
Me on. I appreciate it.
Yes.
I know all the virtual hugs.
Yes. And we'll definitely reschedule you for another time, and
perfect.
And we could do the paranormal or whatever.
We could do that.
So.
I love it so much. Again, I'm not in the world anymore, but it doesn't mean that I don't find ways to put myself in it because I just miss it.
Right.
I'd be absolutely fun to talk about paranormal and all of that.
Cool. All righty. Well, thank you again.
Thanks so
I appreciate
much,
it.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay,
you too.
Bye.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.